Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Nevada is the only state in the country where women hold the majority of seats in the state legislature. And yesterday, lawmakers in the assembly there passed a bill that eases some requirements in Nevada's abortion laws. Now, this goes in the opposite direction of the restrictive legislation that's been signed into law in Alabama last week and moving through the lawmakers' pipeline in many other states. These agendas would limit abortion rights. But the Nevada bill now goes back to the Senate, and then it'll go on to the governor. There is a lot to dive into in Nevada politics. And joining us by phone is James DeHaven. He is the political reporter for the Reno Gazette Journal. Hi, James. Glad to have you on Insight.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So abortion laws are in the national spotlight right now. Can you say more about this legislation that the Assembly passed yesterday and a version of it that the Senate passed earlier?
Yeah, so Senate Bill 179 decriminalizes abortions in Nevada. The state has had a law on the books for many years that can technically send doctors to jail for performing an abortion after 24 weeks. No one's ever been prosecuted under it, but it was on the books, and so they wanted to clean that up. SB 179 also strikes a requirement that requires doctors to explain the physical and emotional implications of getting an abortion, and it allows them to just describe the nature and consequence of the procedure as opposed to going into other specifics about it. And they no longer have to record the age of the patient seeking an abortion. So those are the major provisions, and it's expected to get to Governor Sisolak's desk here pretty shortly.
Talk about the fact that the governor has made clear where he stands on this issue. He's a new governor. He is a Democrat. So I think most people can guess what might happen, but what's being said there about what the governor might do?
Well, Sisolak hasn't explicitly said that he's going to sign it, but I think it's fair to say that he's expected to sign it. You know, he's a pro-choice Catholic, but a Democrat, and he's never said that he is even hedging on this bill or anything remotely like it. I think it's fair to say it's going to get done in the coming days.
The Assembly vote, I think, James, went pretty much along party lines. And we can reflect on the Senate bill as well. But that's the key to the story, too, is where party lines are and the number of votes on each side. I think the Assembly vote was 27 to 13. So talk about not only this piece of legislation, but in general, what's happening there with the changing face and gender in particular.
Well, Democrats run the show, and now women run the show, frankly. So the bills like the abortion decriminalization bill, a lot of pharmaceutical, sort of crackdown legislation that's moving ahead of the legislature. These are things that maybe would have been more contentious in past sessions, but now really, frankly, they're flying through. And so that's been a key difference that you've seen, under the female majority, maybe as distinct from past sessions.
It's probably worth talking a bit about the difference between Nevada and California in terms of lawmakers' jobs and when they meet. We're saying they are in session now, but will you note the difference?
Well, yeah. I mean, in Nevada, the legislature only meets every other year for 4 months. So it's 120 days of madness, pretty much. There's a lot of procrastinating, just as there is with anyone else doing their job, I guess. But it seems especially acute when you're only there for, again, such a short period of time, and you have so much to do. And legally under the Constitution, they have to balance the budget, so that takes up a lot of headspace and a lot of bandwidth in the building. And then getting other types of social policies out sometimes can take a back seat, although, our economy is doing fairly well. The budget should be coming together in the next few days. If not, I guess we'll have to go into a special session. But I would say that's the primary difference between Nevada and California from a legislative point of view. There's always folks in Sacramento getting stuff done. In Nevada, Carson City is just one big zoo for, every other year.
Some people might differ with you on how much gets done in California or when it's getting done.
That's true.
um, The one place now that Nevada stands alone is that women hold 50.8% of the state's legislative seats. There are 23 in the Assembly, 9 in the Senate. I guess no state has ever surpassed the 50% mark with a female majority. There's an article that you and the staff worked on titled Meet the 12 Women Who Turned the Nevada Legislature into the First Ever Female Majority. Give me some of the basics about this group of 12.
Yeah, so 9 of the new female legislators, and that's the group that we were referring to when we said 12, is the ones who are brand new, freshmen this session. 9 of them were voted in. 3 of them were appointed. If I remember correctly, all but 2 of them were Democrats. So this is, by and large, a pretty young group, but also very diverse. There's school teachers in there. There's, you know, lawyers. There's actually 2 or 3 lawyers, come to think of it. There's a longtime culinary union rep. So they bring a lot of, you know, a whole array of experiences, I guess. And I think that's really helped add flavor to this session, which otherwise has been bogged down for various reasons. But yeah, this new bunch, this freshman batch, has been really interesting to watch them assert themselves. They have not been timid at all. They don't, you know, sit there during meetings and quietly learn. They get themselves into, you know, important spots on committees, and they speak their mind on the floor. And they've been, again, just very assertive. So that's been refreshing to see.
You're right. All Democrats except Alexis Hansen from Sparks, who's a Republican, and Melissa Hardy from Henderson, who's a Republican. How many of the 12 have held an office before, James?
None of them. I don't think.
You're right. One has held an elected office before.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I think that contributes to sort of the new flavor that they're bringing is they just haven't done this before. They haven't, you know, paid their dues on, you know, county commissions or on the city council. And that can sometimes sap the ingenuity out of politicians, if you will. If you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, you have a tendency to do things differently. And that is, I think, has been a nice shift this session.
In that same Reno Gazette Journal article, the interviews with each of the different new lawmakers illuminated a couple common themes in what they think about this new majority. Many said things like, there will be a huge impact on the state. It reflects a new generation of voters, new activists, new leaders, a new opportunity to be heard and taken seriously, fresh ideas, a unique voice, and then that it will open up eyes in other states as well. So this is from within the lawmakers. What about the reaction and perception outside to this brand new legislature?
I think the reaction and perception from outside, especially from, you know, national media outlets or whatever who come in and are looking at this, is that we're going to, you know, that this female majority is going to be pushing a lot of, you know, stuff, a lot of female-focused initiatives. That hasn't so much been the case. I mean, the abortion decriminalization bill is a big deal, and they've been heavily focused on that. They've introduced sexual or human trafficking legislation. They've done things on domestic violence. They've introduced a number of measures like that. But broadly, they've been focused on, you know, hardcore policy issues, education being the main one, healthcare, drier, not identity politics focused stuff that, you know, is a tougher pill to swallow legislatively. You know, it's easy to go out there and score points on a tampon tax bill or something that's going to pass very quickly. It's harder to push through stuff that really makes a change in the state for all the residents. So they've been focused on that, and more than one of them has told me that the way they see the female majority is, okay, well, that's one state down. We have, you know, 49 more to go or whatever. They see themselves as just sort of the bellwether for this, and it's going to become a trend nationwide.
I am talking with James DeHaven, political reporter for the Reno Gazette Journal. Even the Washington Post took notice and published an article. We should add a link to it on our webpage. The title is Where Women Call the Shots. And it's pointed out in there, James, that even though the election of President Trump in 2016 mobilized Democratic women in particular across the country, already in Nevada, there was a high number of lawmakers in the legislature. So it's not like this was a sudden and dramatic shift. It is over the majority. But what had the showing been in terms of women elected to office?
Oh, gosh. I mean, yeah, we have been trending toward a female majority for a couple sessions, and they've been a loud voice in Carson City for some time now. I think what changed this time around in 2018 to push it over the top into becoming an actual majority was there was a nonprofit candidate recruiting group out of Vegas, and their name escapes me at the moment. But they did a lot of work recruiting almost every single one of the new female lawmakers that have come in, apart from the ones who were appointed. They found these candidates, they linked them up with the Democratic Party, they helped get them funded, and also they came in at the right time, right? So there was the broader national trend of the Year of the Woman that was played up a lot. It was a blue wave election, so that favored a lot of these female candidates who, again, were almost uniformly Democrats. So some of it was just striking while the iron was hot, so to speak.
They range in age from 23 to 67. Are there one or two voices or personalities that have become particularly vocal? I know one of the new senators has been getting more attention because she really efforted this changing abortion bill. But what else in terms of that question?
Dallas Harris, who is one of the appointees, she was a lawyer for the State Public Utilities Commission, is actually still a lawyer for them. She's very feisty. I think even she would self-describe that way. And she's been really good on marijuana issues. She's been very assertive on other things that are not so easy to understand when you're coming in from the outside as someone who doesn't have a lot of previous policy experience. So I think she's been a real standout. Sarah Peters from up here in Reno stands out not just because of her purple hair, but because of a bill she carried to make neon the state element, which is kind of a fun, agreeable bill. But it also—
Wait,
is,
say that again. To make neon the state element?
Yeah, neon the state element, yes. <That's>... so she got a lot of press for that, but she's also very, she's an environmental engineer by trade, so she's very good on wonkish resource bills that, again, most of us, if we had to try and read them, we would fall asleep immediately. But she has been very attuned to that type of stuff. And I think both of them have been really standouts as far as the freshman class is concerned.
So a quote from Sarah Peters in your article is, "We have different perspectives and perceptions and experiences that we bring into the way we legislate. We talk about equity. We talk about unintended consequences. And those are conversations women have in a different way than men." And a quote from Dallas Harris, you said the Democrat from Las Vegas, is, "If I have anything to say about it, the first female majority is going to have a huge impact on the state of Nevada in a positive way. By raising the level of discourse, collaborating, and getting things done, as women are known to do." Part of being able to pass legislation is collaborating, getting along, reaching across the aisle, and working together. So how is that happening in this new legislature?
Well, yeah, to that point, I can't really overemphasize the fact that you could almost fit the Republican caucus, in a car together, right? So You don't hardly need, if you're Dallas Harris or Sarah Peters, to negotiate with them. But that said, they have worked hard to be as bipartisan as possible and to hear a lot of Republican bills. And even the Republican legislative leaders have, at least occasionally, applauded them for, giving them a fair shake on stuff. Even the Republicans don't have the votes to stand in the way of, frankly, anything the Democrats want to do. I think that it's noteworthy that the Democrats have saw fit to include them in the process.
So the legislature had two resignations, I believe, and an unexpected death, and those have been hurdles for everyone to deal with. Has that changed the pace of business in some ways?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have stuff like that happen, it's really a domino effect, because you have to fill those seats once they're vacated, right? The county commissioners have to appoint someone to step in there. You have to shuffle around chairs on the committees. And in the case of Kelvin Atkins' resignation, you have to replace him with the new Senate Majority Leader, which is a big job. And Nicole Cannizzaro has stepped up and I think been a very effective leader in that role. But, I mean, all the bills that these guys who resigned, and Tyrone Thompson's case, he died, unfortunately, all of their bills had to be shifted to a new sponsor. They had to be picked up by someone else or abandoned. It just becomes a logistics nightmare. So it's more than just a few days of observances or, a distraction. It's really, it can change the whole tenor of the session, and I think it has.
All right, James, I'm looking at one more piece of legislation that we'll note, and thank you for your time today. Would you explain a bit about the gun show loophole and how the group of female legislators made a difference in this?
Well, I mean, the background checks bill was, it was again, one of those cases where it was always going to pass, right? But I think the female legislature in particular really interacted closely with the Moms Demand Action group and one of the other gun control advocacy groups whose name escapes me. But, these were moms who were showing up in their red shirts, and they were very active and very vocal about this stuff. And they sort of naturally gravitated, in my opinion, toward the female lawmakers and really struck up a dialogue with them that help advance the bill in ways that maybe it might not have advanced as quickly. I think that's probably the primary role that they played in that. The legislation was, basically copy and paste from Every Down for Gun Safety, the Michael Bloomberg supported group. But as far as getting it through and getting it through in a way that advocates wanted to see it done, and on the anniversary of the Parkland shooting, that was all, you can chalk a lot of that up to female lawmakers and Democratic lawmakers in Carson City in general.
And has that been signed into law now, SB 143?
Yeah, that was signed on the day.
So on that day. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, James. Well, I'm glad to talk with you. Let's stay in touch as this season and then on into the presidential campaign unfolds. And I'm glad to have you with us on Insight.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
That is political reporter for the Reno Gazette Journal, James DeHaven. We'll post a link to some of his articles and the article from the Washington Post. And this is Insight on CAP Radio.